Jen Zamperali on 2FM with Leia Healthcare. Always a beat ahead. Visit leiahealthcare.ie. Leia Healthcare, looking after you always.
There we go, looking after you always. And I want to talk about men looking after themselves because Irish men have a bit of a bad rep when it comes to looking after themselves. They really do. While attitudes to diet and exercise have improved, which is a great thing, the same can't be said for basic stuff like, you know, I don't know, going to the doctor. Well, Dr. Emmett Byrne is back with me again to talk about men and healthcare. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks.
It's great to have you back in studio. Now, Emmett, what does the research tell us about men's reluctance to attend a doctor?
Yeah, so it's broken down into two main categories. Those categories are structural barriers and then internal barriers.
Okay.
So structural barriers would be things like they seem to get affected or flustered more by the availability of appointments and waiting times, the privacy of a consult, meaning that sometimes you have to declare to the receptionist why you're going to attend, and sometimes guys don't like that. The availability of a male practitioner, which mm-hmm. is very strong when it comes to, say, personal issues like sexual issues or particularly with older men.
Okay.
And the environment is the GP environment, for whatever reason. Well, it's a fairly, I mean, I think there is an obvious reason for this, but it's more associated in men's heads with women and children. They associate GPs with women and children and not with themselves. So they don't have a connection to the environment.
Okay.
And then the internal barriers would be the things that we'd already know. Things like the fear of getting some sort of a diagnosis, the embarrassment of having disclosing some information or having to say, I'm not perfect, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
The masculinity component, which is the kind of macho, the way they're conditioned, and then the stoicism side of it, the bit that, you know, I can get on with this without having to get any help. So they're the kind of main barriers that the research is showing in
okay.
relation to it. The problem is it's translating across into what is interesting is that if you look at a graph of life expectancy globally between men and women from 1970 to 2020,
yeah.
it's gone up. So the angle is at about maybe 25 degrees going upwards in both of them. But what's really interesting is the gap hasn't changed in 50 years. So even though you would think people are living longer, but you'd think that men would have closed the gap somewhere, because those diseases, what kills men earlier than women, is the stuff that we're familiar with. Like, these are non-communicable diseases or chronic diseases that doctors don't cure per se, but manage, that you're familiar with. Heart disease, diabetic complications, dementias, cancers and things like this. Stuff that we can impact if they're got early enough.
Okay, so yes, I was going to say late diagnosis. Men might be getting better, a little bit better, at going to the doctor from, let's say, my dad's generation. And years ago, and we talked about them looking after their health more. They're a little bit more on the going to the gym and exercise and that kind of stuff. But how much would it benefit them if they talked more to each other about their health?
Yeah, so you have to, guys socialize differently and they express issues differently to women, and we know this. So women are much more better at socializing their issues than men. Okay, men are much more likely to rely on a negative form of kind of let's say medication, alcohol for example, or drugs or whatever, so to kind of mimic or to mask over their issues, and that mm-hmm. that's much more likely because they don't socialize their problems as well. But there is research now showing what men associate very strongly with is group therapy and laughter. So trying to kind of, you know, some approaches are trying to kind of, you know, make a kind of a humorous approach to the medical side of things in not a very serious sense, and have a laugh about it and show that, like, this is actually very normal, particularly around mental health issues.
Yeah.
Because mental health is highly stigmatized, and with men it's even worse because they don't see it. It's kind of like it's seen as a very much a weakness rather than an illness, if you like, and they won't declare it, and then they'll try and medicate it their own way and then run into real problems, and then they, you know, obviously are getting to the doctors when it hits critical mass time as opposed to when it's much earlier. That's the problem.
Do you think it's important, we were talking about this off air, coming up to silly season now, and a lot of people have a lot of things going on, there's a lot of work to's and a lot of opportunities to get absolutely smashed out on a night out. How important is it to factor in those opportunities to talk, those walks, those coffees,
yeah,
instead of sitting in front of a screen and watching a match with a friend, you know what I mean, where you probably only say about four words together?
Yeah, it's very, I think this is new thinking and being the attachment
really
of, yeah, absolutely. I think that the idea of combining what would be a positively social occurrence or, mm-hmm. you know, event, if you like, where socialization is one of the most important things for your health, okay? Having a laugh is a very powerful antidote to disease as well. And bringing those two things together. Now, we do use the social lubricant of alcohol as well within those contexts. And being able to balance that out with something like an activity or is becoming, you know, more and more to the fore. Like, as you say, going for a hike and then having a few beers afterwards, or going on some sort of a, like what cyclists have done for years is they'd cycle, they'd go for a couple of hours on the bike, then they'd stop and they wouldn't be drinking, but they'd have a couple of coffees and then they'd have something that they'd like to eat, a bit of sweets or whatever mm-hmm. it is, cake, whatever, and then they cycle home and stuff. You can apply that logic to say, for example, a Christmas outing. But what I would advise, rather than, that takes planning and it takes somebody to take the lead on that. What I would advise around the Christmas season is to plan your nights out and to not just flow through the whole Christmas, because inevitably then what happens is you're not thinking about what you're doing. So if you have your plans, I'm going to go out this night, I'm going to go out this night, and I'm going to go out this night, then you're more disciplined in terms of how you are going to approach the Christmas. Because if you crash the boards over December, it will do a fair bit of damage to your health.
We're getting a lot of texts in on this, Emma. Somebody texted in saying, have to say, being someone with a mental health issue, I'm not happy about telling a receptionist who lives near me why I'm attending the doctor or disclosing to her my repeat prescription for renewal. I don't bother going anymore. Would you say this is a problem? Small town mentality, people knowing your business, but that's...
Yeah. Yes, it is. This is things that we're dealing with. And I think that there are ways around this. Like there are, for example, with prescriptions, you can have automatic repeat prescriptions put through. You can request that you just want to deal with the doctor as well, in a sense, for somebody who is established and already has a diagnosis. You can do that. And I think the doctor themselves are going... The problem is that doctors are under enormous amounts of time pressure. And adding on even one little phone call can actually make a difference to their day if you're doing that with hundreds of patients over the course of a week. So a lot of this stuff can be automated now. And we are looking at those options in relation to particularly with repeat prescriptions. So you have less, I suppose you say, unnecessary contact time, because contact time is important in certain instances. But in this time where it's going to be a barrier to somebody getting treatment that is much needed, then it is a problem, but it's a useful solution.
It is a useful solution. Absolutely. I mean, first and foremost, you need to look after your health, no matter who that receptionist is, even if it's an ex-girlfriend of yours. Somebody else texts in saying, hi, Jen, men often don't go to a doctor or they leave it too late because we're ashamed for feeling unwell, this texter says. Often when a man says he is feeling unwell, the response he gets is, mainly by women, oh, would you stop if you had to go through what we go through, or man flu, which we bandy around quite a bit. Men are not ignoring their health or being too manly in their own minds to go and see a doctor. It's more that they are made feel embarrassed or shamed if we do. Is there an element of truth in that?
There is, but it's coming from both sides. So, for example, men are wired to minimize pain and to minimize the expression of need. Okay, so that's their wiring. Okay, when you have something that is a thought or a process, it has an equal and opposite reaction in universally. Okay, it has to have that. So when men are brought up in the environment that we're brought up in, particularly, and even in the modern environment where it's kind of equalizing a little bit, we cherish and we nourish, you know, kind of macho sort of things and independence and strength and all the different things. And we nurture those values, and we put a high level of value on them. And then and performance, that's another one. Like, that's why sport is so big in guys' minds. When you look at, say, the caring side of a guy, the guy who needs to be, you know, supportive, caring, nurturing, that's more associated with a female thought process. Now, this isn't me being sexist in any way. This is absolutely proven. And the problem is we don't put a value on these things. And if you have that mindset, you're more likely to look into yourself and face up to these consequences and get them dealt with. And that's the problem. Now, I'll give you an example in a kind of a, it's not highly accurate, but it'll give you an idea. A colleague of mine did research with a group of men and offered free screening for the biggest killer, which is cardiovascular disease. Guys don't have a value on that. They just don't care. So no one bit down on it. But they offered something we've talked about before. They offered free testosterone checking, which is associated with performance, both sexually and physically.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone went for it.
Jumped at it, I'd say. Yeah.
So it's the mindset of guys, you know, is different in the way they look at these things. And it can have a knock-on effect socially. Yeah.
Well, it's going to affect your health and socially as well. So what do we do here? How, I mean, you are a doctor, but also a former professional athlete.
Yeah.
What do you think will help change men's attitudes?
Well, from a professional athlete point of view, we deal with outcomes first, because it's very obvious when you do well and when you don't. You either lose or you win. So you can't hide away from that. So we have to look at the processes. So the problem is, it's not as obvious in medicine. Okay, even going to your GP, where is the value in that? And understanding, you have to manage your expectations when you go to a general practitioner as well. GPs are actually brilliant at what they do, but they handle complex diseases, chronic diseases, and diagnoses. So it's kind of like a disease risk model, where you go in, you're assessed, you get your blood pressure checked, your lipids checked, your cholesterol rudder checked, your risk for diabetes and so on. And based on those numbers, then you're categorized into a certain low, moderate, high risk, and you're managed accordingly. And it's done very well, although it needs more resourcing again to make it even better. But the thing is that doesn't kind of manage what some men would associate with health, which is your functional health, your strength, your fitness, and so on. It doesn't give you an obvious change. So if you start a medication with somebody, they might not have you not feel better. They might feel a little bit worse because of side effects, but it is keeping them alive. And they associate that not with a good thing, but with a bad thing. So all these things, this is an awareness and education and an expectation management that needs to be pushed out there. It's very important that you get these things checked, particularly after a certain age.
What age?
I think anything over 40 for a man, they should be checked. If you have a genetic risk, if you had a father who passed away from heart disease under the age of 65, I'd get it done even earlier.
Okay.
But the point, I'd say, and you're safe enough if you go yearly over the age of 40. The problem is you're...
Yearly, did you say?
Yearly, yeah.
Over 40. Wow.
Yeah. On average. Like, I mean, that's a...
Yeah.
That's
no, but that, I'm sure a lot of guys would be shocked by that as well.
Yeah.
Now, I know we've spoken about this before,
yeah,
but... getting yourself checked. Do you guys do you do it out there? Do you get yourself checked? Are you over 40 and get yourself checked on a yearly basis? I'd love to hear from you on that. 51552. So that's an important thing to do. And if we have that as a benchmark.
Yeah. So I divide health into two components. That's the GP will look after that side of it. That's your disease risk side of it. The other side of it, no one can do for you except yourself. That's getting out, doing a bit of exercise, eating well, and so on. And those things, GPs will make you aware of them, but there are things that is being worked on now called social prescribing. I work in one of them. It's actually linked into the medical system, where we actually prescribe exercise for people that are at risk of developing disease, which links then the functional side of it to the actual kind of disease risk medical side of it.
Makes
that
sense.
There's a disconnect in that at the moment, and guys identify much higher with the functional side. So if I got a guy in with a personal trainer twice a week for a month, he'll feel more from that than he will by going to a GP, you know, once a year or twice a year, whatever. But the thing is, you need to do both. You need to see the GP a lot less, obviously. So the thing is, the program I work on is secondary prevention, meaning it's with people who've already had their diagnosis. They're much more likely to attend because of that. And it's an exercise direct program called XWell, linked in directly to the medical system, so the doctors can see the differences in their functional health as well. We need to get that in and roll that out for primary prevention, which is for younger people who haven't had their diagnosis or their heart attack or stroke.
They haven't had that scare.
Yeah. They haven't had it, no, but it's important that we try and get ahead of the curve and keep them away from that.
Sure.
You know, that's the key. So, but these are the two sides, but men identify with one side more than the other, and it's not always, you know, those expectations aren't always understood very well.
Okay, but it's both. You got to look after it. Lads, you need to talk to each other, and you need to talk to your GP. Dr. Emma Byrne, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Jen Zamparelli on 2FM with Leia Healthcare. Always a beat ahead. Visit leiahealthcare.ie. Leia Healthcare. Looking after you always.